Judges 21, you need to really listen to the talks on Judges 19 and 20 to get the full context here. The men of Israel had sworn in Mizpah, not one of us will give his daughter to a Benjamite as wife. Well, they've just wiped out most of the Benjamite men, and they've lost 40,000 of their own, at least, in doing this, in this ridiculous civil war that has arisen over believing one alcoholic Levite who's not told the truth and has set them all up to believe that wicked men had murdered his wife, etc., when he's putting the story quite to his own benefit and withholding critical information, like, for example, the fact they didn't kill her and she was able to walk back to the house and knock on the door, but he was so drunk he didn't open the door, and so she had to stay there all night and died. Anyway, I said that earlier that one of the themes is the mixture of flesh and spirit, and this thing about we won't give our daughters to any Benjamite. Well, it was the will of God that the inheritances should remain within the tribes, and marriage between the tribes was by implication not encouraged. You see that with the whole reasoning in the case of the daughters of Zelophehad. And so they're grabbing this principle, a very sort of high principle, and applying it to themselves, when really it is to justify their own anger and bitterness with the Benjamites. Well, they now come to Bethel, and they sat before God, and they wept bitterly before God, saying, why has this happened, that there should be one tribe missing from Israel? Well, they sat before God twice when they were defeated by Gibeon and had lost 40,000 men. They sat before God and wept, and now they win. They still sit before God and weep. So it's tears all round. And this is what happens in any division. It is tears all around in the end. And they ask God, why has this happened that there should be today one tribe missing from Israel? Well, the question was its own answer. Why has this happened? Well, you should know, guys. You did it. You overreacted. You got on a feeding frenzy of hatred and put these guys in a shock tank of hatred and destroyed them because you couldn't control your own bitterness and because you just loved to indulge the human desire for judgment of others. There's your answer, guys. And they knew that on one level. And it's rather like when they pray to God before him, weeping before him, when they've been beaten the first time, and they say, should we go up and fight against our brothers, the Benjamites? Well, the question was the answer. Should we go and fight against our brothers? No, of course not. But God says, yeah, sure, go. He confirmed them in the wicked way that they really wanted to go. And I gave the example of Balaam, that God didn't want him to go with the messengers from Balak, but he does. And when the angel stops him dead, nearly kills him, Balaam says, oh, I'm sorry, I've sinned. Shall I go back? Well, yes, Balaam, of course. God doesn't want you to go with these men. Don't you get it? He's blocking your path. But then the angel says, yeah, go with them. In other words, you're running headlong, as Jude and Peter say, in the way of the flesh. Okay, God will encourage you in that way. And he will more positively encourage us in the way of the Spirit, if that's what we want. This is the difference between the work of the Holy Spirit and the work of an evil spirit from the Lord. Not Satan or anything like that, but an evil spirit from the Lord, which you see in the case of Saul. And I think it's helpful to pray out loud, because as you verbalize your requests and your questions, and you hear your own voice saying those things, I think the answer starts to come. And you see that in a lot of David's prayers that are recorded in the Psalms. He questions God, and then in the course of the prayer, he sort of works out the answer. So then the next day, the people arise and build an altar and offer burnt offerings and peace offerings. Well, the usual order is sin offering, burnt offering, peace offering. You sin, you recognize you've sinned, you offer a sin offering, and then you promise devotion to God with the burnt offering, and then you celebrate the peace that comes from that in the peace offering. But they don't do that. They just dispense with the sin offering because they can't accept they've sinned, and they offer burnt offerings and peace offerings. But they were fake because there was no sin offering. It's like singing hymns or songs of great devotion to God and great peace with God, well, if you haven't in your heart on a personal level been convicted of your sin, then all that fine music is all just so much noise. That is verbiage. Unless you have from a broken and contrite heart, a humbly accepted your sinfulness and want now to respond to the grace you've experienced. So they say, well, who is there among the tribes of Israel who didn't come up to the big assembly that we called? Because they had made an oath that anyone who didn't come up to Yahweh to Mizpah should surely be put to death. Well, you see their hypocrisy. Benjamin didn't come up, so they said, oh, great, we can now put Benjamin to death. They didn't come to the meeting. But not everyone had come up to it, as we are going to read on here in Judges 21. Jabesh-Gilead hadn't come up, and they hadn't gone and killed them, but they went and killed all the Benjamites because they didn't come to the business meeting, as it were. I've seen all that in my church experience, that there's a meeting held in order to decide certain things about disfellowshipping people, and lo and behold, if you don't turn up at it, you're disfellowshipped. If you do turn up at it, you're going to be disfellowshipped. Oh, things are a waste of time. You're wasting your breath trying to reason with people who've made up their mind about the narrative. They want to believe in what they're going to do anyway. And it was a case like this here, and it was all tears, whatever way it went. So the Israelites grieved for Benjamin, their brother, saying, there's a tribe cut off from Israel this day. Yeah, I wonder, by whom? And they talk about our brother Benjamin. You see how conflicted they were. How shall we provide wives for those who remain, since we've sworn by Yahweh that we won't give them our daughters as wives? Well, a lot of these questions beg an answer. Well, humble yourselves and say to God, look, we've done wrong all the way through in this matter, and we have made an over-hasty oath. We ask that we don't have to keep that oath. You learn at the end of Leviticus that if you made an oath to God, you could still change it. You had to pay consequences. But they can't humble themselves to do that. It's like the times in the biblical records where powerful men or kings promise, I will give you up to the half of my empire. You think of Herod and Herodias' daughter, or the king at the time of Daniel, when he's thrown into the den of lions for praying. And they say, oh, well, I can't change. I've made the promise, I can't change. Well, of course they could change. These were powerful men, but it needed humility. And that was in deficit. So they then come up with this bizarre idea that they would massacre a load more of their brethren at Jabesh-Gilead to get women whom they could give to the Benjamites, and they would kidnap a bunch of girls from a Passover dance in Shiloh. Well, they're just going from one idiocy to another. Why not just humble yourselves and recognize you did wrong and that you have gone over the top? So then, the whole thing is because of pride. The Levite was proud, and so he messed up. The whole thing is based upon pride and everything gone wrong. So then, the sad record really concludes with the sort of expected comment, really, that there was no king in Israel and each man did what was right in his own eyes. Just follow your heart is very foolish advice, really. Just do what's right in your own eyes. The eyes are the heart, really, in the Bible. No, that's not the way to go. God was their king, should have been their king. And following his most basic principles, you wouldn't have come to this mess. It says in verse 24 of Judges 21 that the Israelites departed each to his tribe and his family. And you sort of imagine these guys walking in the door, like, how'd the war go, Dad? You know, how did it go? What a miserable story. No tales of glorious victory. We lost 40,000 of our own men. We wiped out the whole tribe of Benjamin, then we killed a load of fellas in Jabesh Gilead, broke up multiple families, and now they return to their family. The point is, once you go down this path of division and of exclusivity and of judgmentalism, and don't tell me that telling somebody you can't have the bread and wine is not judgmental. Of course it's judgmental. Don't kid yourself that you're not into judgment. Don't kid yourself that you are preserving God's truth by, you know, punching someone in the face and telling them you can't take the bread and wine, and upsetting families, breaking up families and feelings and relationships. Once you start on that path, and that path has been characteristic of so many otherwise sincere believers, it's just grief all round. And this is religion gone wrong. And this is what's happened here in this long story. There's three chapters on this in Judges. And I do think that the incident is there to make us see the outline similarities with many situations that we can recall in our own church history, and more importantly, in our own tendency towards being judgmental.